in some very deep way, we finally found our place in history. Not as a dirty joke, not as a doctor's case study, not as a freak, but as a people. Imagine myself
away from you. Remembering Stonewall was engineered by Spider Blue. It was produced by David Isay with a grant from the Pacifica National Program Fund. I'm Michael Shirker.
Today I'm a 38-year-old drag queen. I can keep my long hair, I can pluck my eyebrows, and I can work wherever the hell I want. And I'm not going to change for anybody. If I change, then I feel that I'm losing what 1969 brought into my life. And that was to be totally free.
How can I ever close the door and be the same as I was before? Darling, no, no, I can't anymore. It's too late.
You are listening to KABU Community Radio, and today as we commemorate the 50th anniversary of the Stonewall Uprising coming up just next, KABU brings us local stories from the LGBTQ plus community, stories collected during OMSI's recent event, Pride at the Museum.
On Friday, June 14th, the Oregon Museum of Science and Industry hosted Pride at the Museum, a celebration of the LGBTQ plus community with a night of Pride-inspired science demos, guest scientists, aerial dancers, drag performances, and more. KABU was there, supporting the StoryCorps project Stonewall Out Loud in honor of 50 years. We were collecting stories of queer life in Portland, and here's a sample of some of the stories and experiences that were shared with us that night.
My first Pride event was in 1985, I believe. So I've been to a lot of different Pride events, and this is an event that I've never experienced at a Pride before, so I thought it would be interesting to check out, because Pride has changed a lot since the 80s.
Yes, it has. 85 was your first. Where?
In Boston. A bunch of us had gone to our first gaycation in Provincetown, and I think we had been up for 36 hours when we went to Pride on that Saturday.
When did you know you were first gay?
Well, I believe I was gay out of the womb, or probably before I came out of the womb. I'm the oldest of three, and my sister is about 14 months younger than I am, and I was just enamored with her toys. I was the stereotypical girly little boy, loved playing with her dolls and Barbies, and so I knew pretty much at a young age that I was different. I was attracted to boys from a young age. I didn't know what the word was back then. By junior high, I knew what the word was. Back then, since there was no internet, no cable, I lived in a small town. I knew from a young age that it was not okay, so I hid it. I had crushes on the neighborhood boys, but I had no one to talk to about it. So all through high school, it was pretty different. I learned how to have double life. I first told someone in my senior year of high school, and I actually did experience losing friends who found out. I would say I really started to come out when I started to go to school in Boston. I went to fashion school. That was in 1982. just going into the city every day, going to school, being able to explore not just my sexuality, but how I would present myself to the world. I belong to Boston Alliance of Gay and Lesbian Youth. That was a huge part of my coming out. That's where I met a lot of my friends, that we went to our first gaycation in Provincetown. And that whole experience from 1982 till 1990 was pretty wild.
Do you see things within yourself that you feel run contrary to the standard cis heteronormative, I guess, worldview, like in ways that you don't conform?
Yeah, we've had this conversation before about growing up in the 90s and being a teenager in the 90s, everything was you either are or you aren't. You're either male or female, or you're a wannabe, you know, or something. So I think I had a choice and I had to pick. It's easy for me to identify as a female. It's comfortable for me to be in a heterosexual relationship. But when I was a kid, I remember going to sex ed and learning about how all women will someday get their periods. And I had convinced myself that that was never going to happen to me. I said no. And when it finally happened, I cried. And my mom just like went to the store, bought me a box of maxi pads and like threw it at me and said, stop crying. I was okay being a little girl, but I wasn't okay being a woman.
I came out, so there was a group of us that hung out in my neighborhood, and I would consider us more misfits. One of the girls, Janet, I for some reason felt comfortable telling her. I do remember though, I couldn't say the word gay. I told her there was another boy in the neighborhood who everybody thought was, who ended up not being gay. But I said, you know how everybody thinks Eddie is this way? Well, that's how I am.
How old were you?
I was 17 because it was my senior year of high school. The hardest part about that was she was dating Mike, who was part of our group. And Mike and I were really close. We used to get high together all the time and we hung out. And one day, he came up to the school bus stop, refused to look at me, wouldn't speak to me. And that remained until 2 or 3 years ago when I found out on Facebook that he died. And then I reconnected with another friend from back then who told me that they had reconnected and that Mike was homophobic, had a really difficult time with it. And I had a feeling that that's what had happened, but I never had confirmation of it. Once I got confirmation, I felt sad about it, but ultimately, it was his issue, not mine.
I wasn't really aware of my sexuality until middle school, when I kind of got a grasp of what sexual identity was. But when I was between the ages of 3 and 5, I'm not really sure of my exact age, I was very into girls. I was so into girls. Like, I look back and I was very gay, super gay. When I think back to a conversation I had with my dad, I was playing dolls and I asked if two girls could get married. And my dad, despite the fact that marriage wasn't legalized at the time, he said, well, if they really love each other. And I don't know, that's really stuck with me as like an early sign of me like showing that I am queer, that I do have legitimate feelings for the opposite gender as well as the same gender, and my feelings are real. And it just confirms to me that it's not like a phase that I'm going through, it's not a specific period of being, it's just me, it's who I am. I find a lot of solace in that.
I was afraid to say anything before the age of 18, and I knew it was dangerous for me because I was dependent upon my parents. My mother sent me to a Christian boarding school, I was depressed the entire time. It was a very repressive environment because it was fundamentalist.
But who did you tell?
No glitter.
No glitter.
No glitter was allowed, jewelry, and not lipstick. I loved the lipstick tonight at OMSI. It was beautiful lipstick everywhere. Purple lipstick, blue lipstick, glitter. I really honestly did not understand until recently. I minored in anthropology, majored in zoology, but part of the anthropological thing is you have to keep expanding your experiences with all kinds of cultures. So one of them within the LGBTQ coalition are the radical fairies. So I jumped right in and learned, and it's been an intense learning curve, but because of the radical fairies, I understand why it's important to costuming and, you know, jewelry and makeup, and I give them a lot of credit. And then I got a job at a department store in the last year, and I'm working right next to the makeup counter, and I'm watching all this going on. So for tomorrow, when I go to work, I'm going to have them put glitter all over my face so I can help the people coming to my counter celebrate this beautiful weekend.
I grew up in Southern Kentucky, so there was definitely a very conservative bent to the way I was raised. My family was, for the most part, like, relatively tolerant. There was never really any, like, racial or sexual minority, like, negativity, really. But that said, like, you know, when your upbringing is just steeped in it all around you, like, it can't help but absorb some of it and or just incorporate it by osmosis. I remember growing up and feeling like I just, something was wrong with me because I was watching the boys in my grade, watching people pair up and, you know, the sexual experiences and what have you. Watching the straightforward, like, confidence and borderline arrogance that a lot of them would demonstrate through so many things that they did, and not really feeling that in myself and wondering, like, you know, is there something wrong with me? Because I don't want to force myself out there into, like, you know, other people's spheres. I want to try and relate with people, like, in a more respectful and
authentic.
Yeah, authentic manner. It took me a long time to figure that out. And, you know, and looking back, I mean, there were certainly a lot of missteps in that regard. Stuff like bodily autonomy and consent and such like that, and realizing that my first interactions with my preferred orientation is, you know, wasn't always, like, in line with that.
So my wife and I live with our son, an 8-year-old boy, and he was my very first child. He is also, I should say, my only child. However, I have given birth to 6 children, culminating in 4 pregnancies. The reason for this is that I am a surrogate. I had my son in 2010, and then in 2013, I was approached by a dear friend of ours. She and her husband are a heterosexual couple and had been trying and unfortunately failing for many years to conceive. I enjoyed my pregnancy, I enjoyed everything about being a mother, and was very disheartened to see her struggle. She approached me and asked if we would be interested in a surrogacy for her, and it was what started me on my journey. I had my first surrogacy for them, which ended up being twins. They just turned 6. They have known who I am to them since practically day one. Their parents wanted them to always know. And when the boy was about 3 years old, one day out of the blue, he came running at me, threw his arms around me and said, "Hava, I was in your tummy." And Hava was the name that the mom gave to me. She bestowed that upon me when I had the babies, because Hava is Hebrew for Eve, or also giver of life.
And then I felt like this was kind of my calling. And I am very good at being pregnant. So I decided to do it again. And I got involved with an agency and had my second set of twins. Those twins were for a couple in China. The mother actually lived in America for the entire pregnancy. And I should add that in China, surrogacy is illegal. So she had to pretend that she had been pregnant and had these babies while she was in California. We used her eggs, and the babies were two boys, and they returned to China shortly after they were born. Then I was kind of hooked, to be totally honest, and now I sit here as an almost 37-year-old woman, and I am living in my dream home in Oregon with my wife and son, and we couldn't be happier, and we've brought a lot of kids into the world. You know, there's something to be said for kids whose parents really, really want them.
And how do you choose your families?
And how you choose your families, for sure.
You are listening to Stories of Queer Life in Portland, recorded at the Stonewall Out Loud in honor of 50 years, part of the OMSI Pride at the Museum exhibit, Friday, June 14th.
So who are these radical fairies and how did you find them?
I first found them, I was volunteering at Market Street Initiative, or Gay Mill IM, out on 122nd Street 7 years ago when I first arrived in Portland. So I volunteered at 14 different organizations throughout Portland. And because I had learned after the crash of 2008, I had learned that through service is a way to integrate with society, because as a queer cisgender male who has explored, sometimes I go, sometimes my pronoun is Z because it makes sense, but it's easier for people to just say he, and I'm not, you know.
So
I learned about the Radical Fairies when I was volunteering at Gay Mill IM, and that was an organization set up to help all age groups from 18 to 70 come out so that they wouldn't end up in situations that were harmful to them. So that's how I first learned about the Radical Fairies. I was invited to go to coffee, what they call Fairy Coffee. It is an international organization, and this person said, go on over and hang out for 4 hours. I was so afraid. I sat down on the couch, and the universe tested me. And there was a man in leather with a leather snout, and he came up right up to me and looked at me, and he moved his neck back and forth, and I just looked at him. I was so afraid. I didn't know what to do, and I haven't seen him since. But 5 years later, the Radical Fairies have taught me about Harry Hay, the value of costuming, of heart circles, of integration with community, not doing things alone. Most of us from the queer community have been loners to survive. We had to survive. And so going from being a severe loner to survive into a community has been taxing, but very, very beneficial for me. So they've been a good community for me.
So we're here to tell a little bit about our story and kind of what our experiences have been in the LGBTQ community. So, you know, my story is, you know, back in my 20s, I came out as a lesbian, first when I was in college, and kind of, it took a little while before, you know, I told my family, and that didn't go over quite well. I came from a very religious family. Over the years, I kept reaching out to them, and we did have, as long as it wasn't talked about, everything was fine, you know. But then Selinka came around.
I never really came out, really. It was more of just a realization and a process that I continuously shared with you, which is pretty nice to be able to do that. And I kind of realized that, hey, I'm trans.
The first thing you said to me was that you were experiencing gender dysphoria. And I was like, what? What? I mean, I knew what that was, but it was, I totally did not expect that at all. It caught me off guard.
Thinking about that now, I probably could have said that in a better way.
Well, you said it how you had to say it at that moment. You know, it was the words that you could use to say that. I think, I never, it's funny for me, I was in this community. I was very, I considered myself very liberal and progressive. And when you came out as trans, I was very, very surprised. You know, I was like, are you sure? You know, what? But I also tried not to show that very much either. You know, I tried to keep that as, it tried to continue to be supportive. That was always very important to me is, I love you and I'm going to support you.
And I think that our lives are for all of the better because of that.
Absolutely. I don't think that you and I would be where we're at today in our relationship if we hadn't, if I hadn't just been supportive.
Yeah, we definitely wouldn't have been.
The first person who I came out to was my mom, and it was kind of an awkward discussion because her immediate response was, how do you know that you're pansexual? If you haven't had sex, are you sexually active? Are you using protection? I tried to explain to her that that's not how it works. And then she quickly told me that I couldn't make a decision like that until I was 21, which I'm glad that she's willing to support me at one point or another, but it kind of felt like a slap in the face for her to say something like that, something that kind of doesn't allow me to be who I am, something that makes me feel, it just made me feel so sad and, I don't know, like, the person who I thought would be my biggest ally just kind of said something that really hurt. It hurt a lot. I still, like, bring it up as something that I can't deal with because she supports me with almost everything, so it's just always really depressing when somebody who you care about kind of invalidates you.
Best friend crushes. That's where we all start.
The gays, they just love their best friends, and they're like,
yeah, it's like someone of the same gender who's nice to you, I feel like, and you're like, this is like earth shattering to me. We grow up, I feel like a lot of us feel almost ostracized from our gender. We identify more with and like engage more with the opposite gender. Because it feels more natural. I mean, that's how it was for me. I mean, I was the little boy who played with, like, Barbies and Polly Pockets. And, like, it was that whole thing. And so, like, when you first have, like, that, like, really good friend of the same gender of you, you're like, I love you.
I grew up with only older brothers, so I was very tomboy. I was very adamant about, I'm a tomboy. Because I was, like, a little bit of internalized misogyny going on at a young age. Because my family's very hick. But I also was, like, also kind of a stereotypical girl, too. Like, I was the mini, like, literally my nickname in my family was Mini Mommy. I was always, like, interested in cooking. I was very much also a stereotypical girl. It was a very weird mix, so I think that's one of the reasons I didn't realize it, because I was like, but I still like girl stuff, so I'm still a girl, which is, like, so different, but I didn't really even realize a difference between, like, gender identity and sexual identity and, like, gender expression. It all became something that I taught myself.
That's where a lot of us still, I mean, it's still not something that's just learned. You figure it out. I mean, like, I just, like, immersed myself in YouTube pretty much.
Yeah.
And, like, my mom still asks me so many questions, and sometimes multiple times, and I completely understand. I'm like, okay. It's at this point, though, where it's so hard because you spent so much time immersing yourself. No. It's not even like, oh my God, you're so stupid. It's like, I thought this was like common knowledge almost, because this is just my life that I figured out how to, it's stuff I've built around me and I see it all the time now. Like, people who don't know who Harvey Milk is, like, they changed a street in Portland to Harvey Milk Street. Yeah. And some people were like, why'd they do that? Who's that? And I was like,
oh my gosh.
Do you not know who Harvey Milk is? Like, yeah, that's just something that I can't remember when I found it out, but I know it.
You just learn. Like, you get so interested that you just, like, teach exactly. yourself.
And you forget how many people.
Yeah, it's like a confusion, but it's not like a like an attack. Like, yeah. How do you not know? It's like, whoa, people don't know what that is.
It's always a wake-up call for me that just some people don't. Like, because these are things that I just
know now.
It's, you know, definitely trending me toward accepting that I'm more on the non-binary spectrum, because I definitely have, like, a lot of traits in me that would be considered classically feminine. I get emotional very easily. And I like to love with abandon, and I don't know, it's hard to put words to it, but yeah, there's just so many things that just don't seem to align with the standard dichotomy, and I realize that I don't have to force myself into either one of those, that I can just be who I am.
How does your body feel right now as you say this out loud?
I feel a deep anxiety in my chest and in my throat saying that out loud and into a microphone, like, semi-publicly. And, you know, there's that little bit of fear of, like, you know, oh God, what if people I know hear this, or, like, you know, it gets back to my family, or, like, you know, coworkers and such, you know, even though, like, most of the people in my life would be absolutely accepting of that and probably wouldn't even be that surprised, but there's just that slight tremor of undertone of terror that kind of gets into you when you're just learning to put a voice to those feelings.
I mean, I'm so touched. I joke with you about, wow, if I had access to my emotions, I would cry. But it's really, I'm so touched by how pride has come to the level it's come to today. A mile long, I think, of our allies were jogging with rainbow flags. I should have cried, but again, you know, yeah.
Well, it touched you in the way it touched.
I'm not gay.
So, I really appreciate the fact that all of these queer performers came to the Oregon Museum of Science and Industry today. It was really a touching experience, and I loved it. It makes my heart really happy that this happened, and it really, I'm so glad that I live in Portland.
Thanks to Brianna, Brian, Cheyenne, Dominic, Isaac, Jessica, Kazmira, Michelle, MJ, Scott, Sean, Zelinka, and to Omzi and Beth Scott. This was recorded by Brianna Loringer and Aaron Yankee and the participants, and was produced and edited by me, Aaron Yankee. Thanks for listening.
this is KBOO Portland. It's 8:59 a.m. Coming up at 9, One Land Many Voices explores the political, social, and cultural issues affecting Israel and Palestine. At 10, Voices for the Animals, host Dab Stedman talks to Carrie Teal, co-founder and executive director of Gray2K USA Worldwide, an organization dedicated to ending the cruelty of dog racing both in the States and abroad. At 10:30, Film at 11 focuses on dramas and documentaries about Stonewall, the place and the event that gave birth to the gay rights movement, with special guest Stefan Silvis. And at 11, Making Contact brings a special Beyond Stonewall. Then at 11:30, Outcasting, veteran gay journalist and activist Andy Hum about the historical progression of LGBTQ life and activism since before Stonewall. Don't forget that you can hear all these programs after they air on KBOO.fm or on iTunes and Google Play. All of these KBOO programs are made possible by members' support. To become a member, go to KBOO.fm or use the mobile app and click on Donate. Stay tuned now for One Land Many Voices right after these important announcements.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the Waterfront Blues Festival, taking place July 4th through 7th at Waterfront Park in Portland. The Waterfront Blues Festival is the largest blues festival west of the Mississippi. The festival features more than 100 performances on 4 stages, including the Robert Cray Band, St. Paul and the Broken Bones, Trombone Shorty, and Vintage Trouble. There will also be workshops, cruises on the Willamette River, activities for kids, after-hour jams, fire